What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I got to tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate, so don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes, and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions, and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
Spectrum of metabolic health is so much more than just healthy and unhealthy, right? It takes a long time for you to develop diabetes. We're hoping that with CGM use, they can keep themselves healthier for longer and not reach that place of having a concerning diagnosis and having to sort of work backwards to undo it or to manage it.
Hey there, welcome to the Biohacker Babes podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Renee, a certified nutritional consultant with a master's degree in nutrition.
What's up? And I'm Lauren, functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner and Czech movement specialist. We're sisters and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
Our mission is to provide actionable steps so you can optimize your health, strengthen your intuition, and support your body's natural healing abilities. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to the show.
Welcome to episode 235 of the Biohacker Babes. My name is Lauren. I'm tuning in from New York City today, and I'm joined by my co-host and sister, Renee Bells, across the country. Hello, Renee.
Hi.
In Las Vegas.
Yep, tuning in from Vegas today. Hi, everyone.
All right, we are talking about one of our favorite topics. Sorry, selfishly, it's my favorite topic. I'll let Renee speak for herself. I think we have talked about this quite a bit on the podcast. If you follow us or if you've worked with one of us, you know how important it is, but it bears repeating. We believe that CGMs, continuous glucose monitors, are for everyone because metabolic health exists on a spectrum. You don't just become diabetic overnight. So we are using these tools as prevention and also to really get great insight on all of our lifestyle and health efforts. It's not just about food. It's how exercise, stress, sleep is affecting us. What we want to really highlight is some takeaways today. We are chatting with Emily Johnson from Veri. Veri in particular has some really cool app features like an Oura integration. So you can sync your Oura ring and look at your sleep data overlaid with your glucose. And what I thought was really awesome was there's a note section that has kind of predetermined stressors that we may encounter that have an impact on glucose, things like alcohol, jet lag, getting your period, and they're all tied with a little emoji. So they make it really easy. You can just go in and select, and it makes the whole tracking and journaling exploration a little bit easier, because we know, I don't know. I don't want to be tracking more, you know, I want to make it more efficient. So some cool things to look forward to.
Yeah, I will add to that the Very program that they offer. I think it's actually really good for beginners, anyone that hasn't had a CGM yet, because I do hear that sometimes, like, well, I don't want a CGM because I don't know what to do with the data. But I think Very will help walk you through that. And Emily even explained that you don't have to wear the sensors back to back to back. If you wanted to do the 2 weeks, take a little break, integrate what you learned, do another 2 weeks, and they'll walk you through that and give you different lessons and practical tips along the way. So I think that's really cool about the app. And then I think my big takeaway from this episode was, do not wait for metabolic markers to show up suboptimal on your annual blood work before getting a CGM. So don't say, oh, my fasting glucose and A1C are fine, this isn't for me. Because I, like I said in the episode, I'm an example of that. On those tests, I'm like optimal, but I still learn something new every time I put a CGM on. And I promise you will too. I've never heard anyone say, oh, I didn't learn anything from that. So
yeah, such a great point. There's so many blind spots when it comes to that snapshot in time with lab work. So yes, hopefully you're motivated to get a CGM. And if you're interested in getting Very, probably particularly for the Aura integration, stay tuned to the end of the episode. We'll share more about how to access it. And you can also scroll down in the show notes for the links. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest. Emily Johnson is a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition interventions, communication, and behavior change from Tufts University. Her background includes clinical nutrition research, health rating, advising, and consulting within the tech sector. At Very, she is the research lead, serving as the health and nutrition expert for the team. In this role, she ensures that Very's app features, marketing materials, and publications are backed by rigorous scientific research. She was a lot of fun, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome, Emily, to the Biohacker Babes podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really stoked to be here to talk to you guys about all things glucose, metabolic health, what have you.
It's my favorite thing to talk about, and I want to just talk about it all day long. So thank you for continuing that desire for me. Yeah, we love CGMs, and I think a lot of our audience is quite familiar with them, but we still find there's a huge part of the general population that's unfamiliar with their use, because for so long, of course, we've been conditioned to think it's only for diabetics. Now we know otherwise. And even if they do know about it, Renee was just out with friends, I think, last weekend, and they were like, what are you doing? Why are you holding your phone up to your arm? What is this strange robot thing? So yeah, we still want to educate around the confusion around these devices, because we believe everyone should use them at some point in their life. It's such a great experiment. I'm curious if you believe in that. Do you think everyone should wear one? And if so, what's the reasoning behind that?
Yeah, totally. So this is a great question, and I love talking about this as well. So very excited. Very, the company that I work with and I'm the research lead and dietitian at, our whole thing is about a CGM can really help you to benchmark your health on the metabolic health spectrum, right? And I think in today's world, and why people aren't as familiar with it, or at least are starting to get more familiarity around the CGM thing, is because we understand there to be sort of these two states of health, right? You're healthy or you have a diagnosis. And in the case of metabolic health and CGMs, this is often around diabetes, right? So it's like, hey, I'm all good. And then one day you go into the doctor's office and you get this surprising or concerning diagnosis of prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. And you're already there, right? You're in the realm of, I'm now not feeling great. My doctor's telling me I need to take this medication. And I don't even understand how I got here. I thought I was doing fine, right? You've been coming in for your annual physical, maybe. And so what we are trying to do with the CGM, and really think the CGM can be really useful for, is for showing you where you stand on the metabolic health spectrum, right? The spectrum of metabolic health is so much more than just healthy and unhealthy, right? It takes a long time for you to develop diabetes for a lot of people. And we're hoping that with CGM use, with people using CGMs outside of the diabetic space or before they get there, they're able to say, wow, okay, my health is actually headed in the wrong direction, or these things about my health are going great, but clearly I need to work on this area, and they can keep themselves healthier for longer, have a longer lifespan, have a longer health span, and not reach that place of having a concerning diagnosis and having to sort of work backwards to undo it or to manage it, right? So that's my big thing about CGMs and why I think they're really great and can tell almost anyone something about their health that they did not know before if they had never worn one.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
So just quick follow-up question. If someone comes to you and they say, all of my markers on my lab test look normal, my physician said I don't need to worry about my glucose, what do you say?
Yeah. So my main thing is, cool, tell me what your A1C is, right? Tell me about that. Do you know anything about it, right? And some people generally know they get an A1C on a regular lab panel. However, an A1C, as your listeners probably know, is a marker of about the past 3 months of average glucose, right? Which is good, right? But that is a snapshot in time and it's averaging things out. So you're not seeing the high highs. You're not seeing the low lows. You're not seeing how certain, again, whether it's food, exercise, sleep, stress, how those things are affecting your glucose. So even if your A1C starts to go in the wrong direction and you go, my doctor says I'm getting close to pre-diabetic, but I'm not there yet, you have no idea how to work against it, right? How to prevent that direction that you're going in. And so I would say, cool, I'm glad everything's going great. Sounds like you're probably in a good place, but let's double check that. You know, are you a healthy person? Are you already doing things to maintain your health? Most people are in some regard, right? They go, oh, I walk every day, or, oh yeah, I eat really healthy. But I still think that there's those aha moments with a CGM, and most of our users can attest to this of, wow, I thought I was having this really healthy breakfast and it turns out my smoothie was really, really affecting me and leading to me having a mid-morning crash at work, or the lunch I was having, or the timing of my exercise. All these things can kind of affect the way your blood sugar reacts. And it, you know, it's not the end all be all always, but it can give you some really good insights and sort of show you where you need to work on your health and where you're already succeeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Opportunities.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm a good example of that. Like my fasting glucose and A1C have always been like beautiful on labs. But wearing a CGM, I've done multiple 2 week stints of it over the last about 2 years. And every time I do it, I learn something new. And my most recent one, I'm going to share this with you. Overnight oats. OMG. I mean, I especially learning from Lauren, like I know oatmeal is not a good option, whatever. And I used to make overnight oats all the time, but I would put like chia seeds and full fat coconut milk and protein powder. I would make it, I don't know, healthy. I'd be curious to test that. But it was kind of a weird day. I got a free overnight oats from this coffee shop. Long story there. And I was like, it looks good. It's got coconut flakes and some almonds. I'll just try it. By far the highest glucose spike I have ever seen. I was like, I immediately texted Lauren. I was like, oh my gosh. And she says, how do you feel? And I'm like, I couldn't really say that I felt anything. So without the CGM, I don't know that I would have known that was happening. But because of that, I immediately went and I took some like dihydroberberine, a couple of things. Maybe it was too late to take those, but I tried. And then I went up and down the stairs, just kept moving my body. And I will never get overnight oats from that place ever again. So really good learning.
Yeah, it's really good learning, especially maybe a devastating learning sometimes when eating out, right? At your favorite health food place or something like that. You're like, oh my gosh, this thing that I've relied on so much. But
yeah,
tons of learnings every time, which I love.
Yeah. I'm like, that was worse than like a scoop of ice cream.
Yeah.
Like crazy. But I think also for me, you know, we were talking about this before we hit record, is like all the other things. So not just food. For me, sleep is a huge thing. If I don't get enough sleep, it's so hard to control my blood sugar the next day. So maybe we can jump into the sleep factor. Like what's going on there? Why is that making glucose so unstable?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, you nailed it with the, it makes it unstable the next day too. There's a lot of research to show that when you lose sleep, whether it's acute sleep deprivation, whether you're waking up in the middle of the night, all those kinds of things, whether even if you're like, hey, I slept for 8 hours, but you're getting very light sleep or not restful sleep, that can affect your glucose the next day and your responses to the same old meal, right? That can be worse than a day that you got good sleep. So there's a few things going on. So when you get into bed at the end of the night, typically your blood sugar, or when you're getting ready for bed at night, your blood sugar should be around 70 to 100, almost getting closer to fasting ranges. This is provided that you have had some time, you're not eating dinner and going right to bed, right? So if you sort of have a standard, ate dinner, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours later, maybe I'm going to bed, your body starts to actually slow down the use of blood glucose, because everything is sort of slowing down. All your systems are slowing down. You are recovering, right? That's what sleep is for. And so your blood glucose will sort of, you know, maybe bump up and down throughout the night, because, you know, your body is going to use some of the remaining glucose. The liver is going to release some glucose, especially as you get closer to the morning, your liver will release glucose to use to wake you up. So there's that kind of thing, which people sometimes closer to waking up, they might see their glucose rise, but this is a normal phenomenon where your body is saying, hey, you're awake, you need energy. So the liver is going to release some of that stored glucose. And so that's sort of the general, right? Like your glucose should probably lower a little bit when you're sleeping. There are things that can make it go up and down at night, but when you are doing things like eating really close to dinner, eating really close to bedtime, eating a large meal, right around bedtime, or getting poor sleep, that can definitely either screw up your night's sleep and your glucose and have effects on glucose the next day.
Mm-hmm. And such a vicious cycle, right? Like you could be not sleeping because your glucose is up and down all night, and then you don't sleep, and then the next day it's worse. And how on earth do we get out of a cycle like that? Any tips for resetting?
Yeah. And you're exactly right. I think that can be a challenge sometimes when you have a CGM and you're getting all this new info and you don't know where to start with fixing things, right? So I, you know, sort of scientist by training, but also like to apply it to real life, is I think what the most important thing you can do typically is hold as many things constant as you can at a time and focus on one thing. So if you're feeling like, look, I know that I don't get enough sleep, and I've noticed that the nights I don't get enough sleep, I don't have good glucose the next day, you should really focus on your bedtime, right? And try to get those 8 hours, or try to implement some sleep hygiene techniques, right? Like, I'm gonna make my room dark, I'm gonna make it colder, I'm gonna get to bed at X time, wake up around X time, and focus on that. Maybe your food isn't perfect, maybe your exercise isn't perfect, but that kind of stuff is going to start to move the needle. And once you've got that habit ingrained, you can sort of start on to the next thing. But it's hard to know when you've got noise from all these variables, right? When you're changing your whole diet, when you're changing your sleep schedule, when you're exercising double the amount of time, like these things can almost, it just creates noise. They can go against one another, right? They can be really difficult for you to determine what is working best for you and what isn't. So I understand that life is, you know, it's not an experiment. It's hard to hold everything constant, but if you can just focus on one thing at a time and nail that, these habits really build on one another and they support one another. So if you're working on sleep, great. And then you start to work on your breakfast or whatever, you've got the sleep nailed. That sleep is just helping your breakfast glucose be better, right? So each thing is going to sort of support the other one, and you can sort of build this foundation, build these habits that are all going to be in sort of a symbiosis, right? To support better glucose, to support better metabolic health, to support your insulin reaction to glucose, all those kinds of things.
Yeah. It's great advice. I think there's plenty of research showing that consistency of sleep is perhaps the biggest variable. And then maybe you don't have to worry so much about what you're eating for breakfast. We should still talk about it. But yeah, the consistency alone may provide some benefits. I'm curious. I'm always kind of having this debate in my head about the circadian rhythm of glucose metabolism. Like you mentioned, our body wants to rest and restore. Insulin is not functioning as well at nighttime. Wintertime, the days are so much shorter. Were our ancestors truly eating a lot earlier? Or are we supposed to be packing on a little bit more weight? So maybe we're a little more insulin resistant in the winter. What is your opinion and thoughts around like meal timing seasonally?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I think there are definitely things that we can pull from our biological evolution, right? We can look to, things like that. I think there's sort of this balance of looking at those kinds of things and also talking about the reality of now. Most of us are not hibernating for winter, right? I mean,
yeah, it sounds nice.
Yes, I was going to say, if you are, let me know where and when. But other than that, most of us are not. And I think that sort of thing that happens is if you're living in a colder climate, snowy, whatever, it can be harder to get outside. It can be, again, the days are shorter. We are feeling more sluggish. And I think that can lead to us putting on some more weight. That can lead to us feeling more sluggish. But the reality is, for a lot of us, most of us have to get up and go to work, kids, responsibilities, whatever it may be, right? So I think trying to stick to a routine as much as you can when you have one is great. There are ways during these winter months that, again, like when you can get sunlight, even if you're already at work, go see that sunlight, right? That's going to help with your circadian rhythm. You know, when you can make your bedroom even darker, even though it's already dark outside, make sure that that is distinguishably darker than the rest of your house, right? If you're trying to set yourself to go to sleep. If you can not put on weight in the winter, great. You know, it's not, I'm not the end of the world, but I do think that our society now and the way the health, we see the health trends going of, you know, heart disease, diabetes, metabolic health conditions is up and to the right on that graph. And so doing what we can to maintain our health, to not let ourselves sort of get slowed down, get bogged down by seasonality. I know it's hard to get up in the winter. I suffer from it too, but trying to stay consistent over those winter and when it's cold is probably best for our collective health rather than, you know, kind of that hibernation type of feel, even though it's feels like everything is pushing us towards that. Right.
Yeah. And so then would you recommend a condensed feeding window to match the rise and fall of the sun? Or would you say consistency across the board?
I definitely think consistency. I think if anything, especially if you're struggling with metabolic health in the winter, the dinner time is what we see the most with people because generally speaking, you are more insulin sensitive earlier in the day. And as you head towards the evening, you are more insulin resistant, meaning that the insulin, which your body produces as a hormone to carry glucose to your cells for energy, is not as efficient. And that's because your body is getting ready to wind down, right? That's that evening, getting ready to wind down. Your body says, okay, we don't need as much of this. But if you're eating later in the evening and then you're going to bed, your body doesn't have time to digest and process. And perhaps the insulin isn't as effective. So you're going to have that higher blood glucose. So I think most people can benefit from not eating as close to dinner time. Sorry, as close to bedtime, eating dinner as close to bedtime. But if they can push it up a little bit in the winter, if you are noticing that, hey, every morning, every night, my blood sugar is higher, I'm having higher fasting blood glucose, I'm really struggling with the winter doldrums, that could be something that could really help you through this time period, trying to eat dinner earlier and maintaining better overnight blood glucose.
Yeah. I'm just now realizing actually, so I pretty much always eat dinner around 5:30, 5:45. That's my go-to like all year round. But in the summer, I definitely noticed that like 8 o'clock, 8:30, I'm in the kitchen looking for a snack. But in the winter, I'm not. I don't know. With it just being dark, my body's naturally like not going for that. So actually, this is a good question. What about a little snack before bed? Like the Dave Asprey has a recipe. It's like a tablespoon of almond butter, tablespoon of MCT oil, and a teaspoon of honey. And a lot of people like rave about that being great for their glucose through the night, but it's still something we have to digest. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So this is a perfect example of where bioindividuality and the CGM as your sort of sidekick is perfect, right? Because you and I might do that same test and you might be like, best sleep of my life. Amazing. My glucose is totally stable. And maybe that doesn't work as well for me. It might be what I ate earlier in the day. It might be what, you know, just the way my body processes things. That sounds fine to me, especially because of the fat paired with sugar. And for some people, especially if they are fasting, we sometimes see people struggle with fasting. They're either too hungry or when they first eat the next day, if they're doing like a fasting overnight, some people go low in the night because have lower blood sugar in the night if they're trying to fast because of the fact that they're just might be pushing it too much for their body, right? They might just be really depleted and running out of glucose, especially if they're exercising, things like that. We sometimes will be like, look, it's might try breaking your fast, but try it with something like this that will give you a little bit of energy. You're not eating a snack that's, like you said, it's you're processing it, but it's not a massive meal to process, right? It's not a whole nother meal at night. Yeah. It's sort of like this small bolus of that, a little fat and a little bit of glucose. It might be perfect at keeping you steady overnight. And then the next day you can kind of almost do like a sort of half fast version, or it might just keep you steady overnight. So you're not feeling that sort of glucose roller coaster going up and down. So I would say it's totally worth the experiment. And I think that's what a lot of CGMs is about, is finding what works best for you. You know, you get this advice from people, which may be good advice, but it may not be good advice for you, right? We all are so different. So trying to use the CGM to guide you as a compass, as a let me find out again, like what works best for me, is really beneficial in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's the biggest benefit of a CGM, when people are like, should I do this? Is this good for me? It's like, let's look at your data. Your data will give us evidence, right? Because I don't know your body. I don't know how
yeah.
your body works. Let's
no, I, yeah. I think that's the best thing, totally. Because again, it's, there's so much out there, right? There's so much advice. If you are going down the, you know, this is sort of like why I wanted to become a dietitian in the first place. I felt like I was, you know, you could find pages and pages of the internet on why one thing works, pages and pages of the internet of why that same thing is never going to work, right? And it's hard to understand if it is or isn't working for you without something objective. And so the CGM will give you that sort of objective data. And, you know, glucose is not a panacea. It's not going to give you insight to every single problem, but it is a good proxy for a lot of problems. And it is sort of the best we have in a lot of ways now, and can, again, be that compass to point you in the right direction when it comes to maintaining your health in a way that works for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on, I've heard some people say, well, you know, glucose is only half the picture. Like we're not looking at insulin, so we don't really know what's going on. But do you feel like because we can see the rise and fall of glucose, we can kind of estimate what the body is doing with an insulin response?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that it's a fair point. Right now, where we are clinically, is that glucose, again, remains the best proxy for understanding on a large scale, insulin response, insulin resistance, all of those kinds of things. So we know that there are ways to test fasting insulin, which is, you know, a blood test similar to a A1C test to see how much insulin is circulating in your system when you are not eating. This can assess, again, how your body is producing, processing, regulating insulin levels. And obviously what you don't want to have is insulin resistant, meaning your body is essentially resisting the hormone insulin and glucose levels are going to become high. So the thing about this is that there's several different ways to test it. They may all be effective, but the fact that there are, one, several different ways to test it, and two, different clinically established levels of appropriate insulin makes this really challenging, right? Like when you have an A1C, that can be translated across labs, across clinics, all of those things, right? There's a large scale clinical agreement on what is a good or okay, or those markers of A1C from American Diabetes Association, World Health Association, all of those kinds of things. Whereas if you look at fasting insulin levels, you'll see some things that say between 5 and 15 millimoles per liter, 2 to 20. You know, I've seen some studies that say, hey, in a Chinese population, it's this much in this, you know, these are the levels. Whereas in a, you know, North American white population, it might be these levels of insulin. So it can be very challenging to say, this is what is the normal insulin level for this, you know, this race, this age group, this, all of those kinds of things. So while it is not silly to test for insulin levels, it may not be able to tell you as much right now as testing for your A1C and glucose related proxy. So your variability, looking at a CGM, there's nothing that's going to tell you exactly how your insulin is working minute in and minute out better than a CGM is going to, if that makes sense. It's a long-winded answer. I apologize, but
no, that's, you know, great. Great insight.
Yeah. We're just hearing coming down the pipeline that we will be able to measure moment to moment insulin function, which in my opinion, I'm like, that's too much information right now. Like,
yeah.
I understand this. Hold on. I'm curious, what do you think the range should be for insulin? Fasted insulin.
Yeah. You know, to be totally honest, I, as a researcher by trade, you know, I previously was in research. I'm so hesitant to say what I think it should be when we don't have all the information there. I think research can be challenging in this way because we have all these ways to test this thing and we haven't reached a conclusion. And granted, especially when it comes to clinical markers, we don't want to be too loose to, you know, you could lead to false positives of being insulin resistance, false negatives, all of those kinds of things. But people do need answers now. So I think I would say the most important thing to do is to continue to, if you're going to test insulin, it shouldn't be done without glucose testing, right? Without looking at either your CGM or your glycemic or your A1C, and then starting to see where people are falling in there. From what it seems to me is 5 to 15 seems to be what a lot of sources, there's an overlap there, right? A lot of sources include somewhere in that range. Some say 5 to 20, some say 5 to 10, right? Keep it really tight. But it sounds to me like 5 to 15 is starting to be the magic fasting insulin number, but I'm, again, eager to see what more clinical evidence brings together, and very willing to be wrong because I'm not the researcher on that one, but it's exciting. It's I think we have to stay abreast of it and see what comes out. So.
I can see clearly with my glasses on. Ooh, didn't know I was recording. Okay, hey, biohackers. Are you spending long hours in front of screens and feeling the strain in your eyes or struggling with poor sleep? Well, we've got a game changer for you. Introducing Filter Optics, the ultimate solution to combat the negative effects of blue light. In today's digital age, we are surrounded by screens from our computers to phones, TVs, and ambient lighting. Did you know that overexposure to artificial blue light has been linked to various health issues such as depression, anxiety, cancer, diabetes, and heart disease? It is time to take control of our well-being with this easy, oh so easy to implement biohack. Filter Optics, the premium blue light blocking glasses designed to remove eye strain, lower stress, and improve our sleep quality. These glasses aren't just a fashion statement, though they look so cool. They're a science-based solution to the problems caused by prolonged exposure to blue light. What sets Filter Optics apart is that they come in four different lenses, each scientifically formulated and lab tested for optimal blue light blocking. You can choose from clear, yellow, orange, and red lenses tailored to meet your specific needs and preferences. And we do not know another company offering this many choices. The clear lens is perfect for daytime use, offering subtle protection without altering your color perception. The yellow lens enhances contrast and reduces eye strain, making it really ideal for those long work hours. The orange lens is your go-to for the evening, helping to unwind and prepare for a restful night's sleep. And of course, our red lens is the ultimate sleep aid, blocking the most disruptive wavelengths of blue light right before you go to sleep. Say goodbye to digital eye fatigue and hello to improved health and wellness. Filter Optics is not just a pair of glasses, but a true investment in your long-term health, productivity, and general superhumanness. If these sound like the glasses you have been waiting for, head over to filteroptics.com/biohackerbabes and use discount code biohackerbabes to save 15% on your order. That is filteroptics with an X. .com/biohackerbabes and use discount code biohackerbabes to save 15%. We are on a mission to normalize blue light blocking glasses everywhere we go, and we hope you'll join us. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Over 10 seems high to me. So I'm just curious, when you are seeing insulin in that upper range, what are you seeing on the CGM?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would assume that there is, and what I am also, what I'm quoting is from papers, from studies that are looking at larger cohorts of people and what these ranges were and what the extremes were and kind of bringing it down to a certain standard deviation. So when it comes to on the CGM, I would say very standard, if you are seeing low insulin function, generally speaking, you will probably see high blood glucose, whether that's just a spike and the graph is going super high because of a meal or because you don't have enough insulin to that meal or something to that effect, that may be the case. But we also know that as people start to have insulin resistance and edge towards metabolic dysfunction of some kind or diabetes or prediabetes, they start to have a lot of the markers that the CGM captures be higher. So that includes your average glucose in general, your fasting blood sugar. So waking up in the morning, not eating, if it's, you know, around 100 or higher, that's cause for concern, right? Having a higher fasting blood glucose. If you are seeing high variability. So your blood glucose fluctuating a great deal, that could be insulin resistance. People think that insulin resistance is only associated with high blood sugar, and that does happen, but it's almost like your insulin mechanism is lagging. And so when you eat a meal, your blood sugar will start to spike, and the insulin, your body is pumping out insulin, and the amount of insulin that it used to use to cover that meal, to bring your blood sugar back down to normal, is now no longer working. So your body might produce, you know, I'm making this up, but double the insulin, right? And by the time the insulin catches up to the blood sugar, one, your blood sugar is super high. You're probably not feeling great. But then it's like you have this cascade effect and your blood sugar starts to crash because you have all this insulin in the system that is finally reaching it, finally opening up the cells for glucose to go in. And then you have this low blood sugar, and your body will actually drive you to eat more sugar when it feels that there is not enough blood sugar in the system. So this is what we call the glucose roller coaster, right? You can go up and down and up and down because you're, you know, you eat all this food to bring your blood sugar back up. Your body's trying to keep you alive, and then you spike again, and we're kind of on that same problem. Mm-hmm. So I would say all of those things, right? You're just going to see glucose markers tend to increase, but you also may, if you're insulin resistant, but you also may see just more variability, more peaks and falls that are more extreme and less within the, you know, 70 to 140 range of glucose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And just like the sleep being a vicious cycle, that roller coaster, particularly in the daytime, is so hard. It's like, how do you hit the stop button? How do we get off the coaster?
Yeah.
So any best practices daytime for, you know, for the people that are listening that maybe feel like they have to eat every few hours or always have a protein bar in their bag, experience like the hangriness, or just feel kind of irritable?
Probably. Yeah. So
I do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, my thing with that is you really want to, if you're have a CGM and you're able to see that you have low blood sugar and you are not diabetic. So again, not going against what anyone's practitioner is telling them if they are diabetic. If you see low blood sugar and you feel as though you need a snack, you want to keep it, you know, 5 to 10 grams of carbohydrates really low. You're going to bring yourself out of that and it's going to flatten out, right? Something like even like you said earlier, like a little bit of peanut butter on a cracker, right? That's like a little bit of carbs, a little bit of fat, going to keep you stable. So if you're on that roller coaster, you don't want to overfeed when you are coming out of it. Also, meal composition, really important, right? The things that we push a lot or say can really make a difference are getting fiber and protein at meals. And if you're going to have carbohydrates, you should have complex carbohydrates, right? So, you know, if you had a pastry for breakfast, you're probably going to be on that glucose roller coaster. Have a salad with some healthy protein, with some quinoa, right? Brown rice, something like that. Sweet potatoes, some grains that you're going to get in there that are going to be carb, but the majority of your meal being something high fiber and high protein, that's just going to slow the absorption of glucose into your bloodstream, going to help you stay stable rather than up and down and up and down. If you do see your glucose starting to spike, always one of the biggest levers you can pull to control your glucose, especially like in the moment, is going for a quick walk. 10 minutes, you know, longer, great, but that will help. If you can't get out of your office, air squats at your desk, do some jumping jacks. I'm an air squat girl. It works. You know, you feel like you're getting some movement in, but it will bring your blood glucose down. It will make your insulin action move quicker and your glucose will start to stable out without some of that crash.
Yeah. I was doing lots of squats and stairs after my overnight oats episode.
Yeah.
And yeah. Fortunately, I came back down pretty fast. So when we are trying to test out the composition of a meal, like you said, we're testing out different protein and fiber, whatever, what are we looking for on our CGM? Like what is the goal for what increase? Because, you know, some people are like, oh, I don't want to see any increase, but increase is natural. So what are we seeing there? And then how long is the goal for us to see it come back to the starting point?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's super important because we very much believe that strongly at Veri, which is that, look, glucose rising after meal is a natural physiological phenomenon. What we say to look for, generally speaking, is rolling hills, right? Your graph is going to go up after your meal. It'll come back down and kind of to baseline, ideally. What you don't want is those jagged mountain peaks, right? You don't want this sharp incline, sharp decline. Both of those are going to not feel great. So, you know, a rise of somewhere from 10 to 20, there is a little milligrams per deciliter of glucose, provided that you're starting relatively low, right? When I say relatively low, I mean like, you know, before a meal, you're anywhere from 70 to 100, say around there. And then you're going to rise, you know, 10 to 20, maybe depending on the carb composition of the meal. For beginners, most of the time I say just start out by trying to stay in that range, right? The 70 to 140 is a good place to start and experiment within. And then if you're going out of it, again, notice how you feel. Did you feel actually like anxious? Did you feel totally fine? Did you feel like your mouth was dry? What are the symptoms that you might be having when you're having a high blood sugar or a low blood sugar? Is there anything you notice? Again, so that you can start to clue yourself in without the CGM. So I think that, you know, that kind of thing can be helpful in understanding a little bit more how certain meals are affecting you. And to your point about the line being flat, look, we can all achieve a flat line. We have to cut out all carbohydrates. That's not what we're condoning. Some people want to do that. Great. If that's your diet, but most people are not interested in doing that. So understanding that you're going to have those rolling curves, that some meals will increase your glucose a little bit more, and then taking the steps to bring your glucose back down, right? Like, hey, I'm going to have this meal a little higher carb. Let's go for a walk after, right? Let's go for a walk after we have our pizza or burgers or whatever it may be if we're enjoying something like that. We'll walk home from the restaurant. After a meal, and what Vary looks at for giving you a meal score, which is one of our proprietary mechanisms for giving you feedback about your meal, is 2 hours after eating. So that's sort of the space that you are looking at to understand how your glucose is being affected by that meal. So, you know, 2 hours after that, your meal is probably not affecting you as much anymore. Whereas, you know, 2 hours after eating at noon, by 2 p.m., your glucose should be back in a normal range. And one of the markers for diabetes, when it comes to a diagnosis, is that your glucose goes above 140 and does not come back down under 140 after the 2 hours. So, you know, again, this is not a diagnostic tool, but if you are seeing something like that, might be worth talking to your provider. But that's when I say that that's what that is. It's when you are in a standardized lab test doing a glucose tolerance test. That's what providers are looking at for a component of the diabetes diagnosis. But a good thing to be aware of on your CGM, I should be under 140 after a meal and going back down to baseline in the 2 hours after a meal.
Yeah, we don't want to get stuck up there. And I imagine most people don't feel so good up there. And that's probably my second favorite reason for wearing a CGM. It's that opportunity to go, how do I feel in this moment? Because so many people are out of touch with how they feel before, during, and after a meal. So it's just a great practice. And I just think it's such a great point about how we don't want to flatline. Like, we all could flatline if we really try, but that's not an accomplishment to cut out the carbs and be flat. So maybe we can zoom out again. If we're not so focused on the food, because that happens a lot, people start fearing food, they cut out the carbs and they're like, look, I'm stable. But there's probably bigger picture things that we're not addressing, perhaps digestion, hydration, stress, I find is a big one. Any of those three that really resonate that you feel like are really important to talk about? What's up, biohackers? Are you tired of feeling tired? Maybe you're one to hit the snooze button from time to time and then slam your head straight back on the pillow. With all of the responsibilities that we have to take care of in a given day at work, at home, with our families, with our friends, it's no wonder that we feel tired so often. Maybe you're the kind of person that takes care of a lot of different things and a lot of different people. But if you really stop to think about it, who is taking care of you? One of my favorite strategies is to use Magnesium Breakthrough, an all-natural supplement that helps me to sleep more peacefully and reduce my daytime fatigue by supporting my energy on a cellular level. It even strengthens muscle and improves our heart and brain function. While most magnesium supplements aren't full spectrum, Magnesium Breakthrough is the only magnesium supplement on the market that contains the optimal ratio of all 7 essential types of magnesium. Imagine having the strength and energy to get out of bed every morning and face the day boldly and courageously, to be able to show up as your best self and keep that energy up through the day and into the night. So if you want to feel more energized and get the best night's sleep you've had in perhaps forever, check out bioptimizers.com/biohackerbabes and use the promo code biohackerbabes10. Again, that is bioptimizers.com/biohackerbabes and the promo code biohackerbabes10. You will be amazed at how much better you feel by taking Magnesium Breakthrough. Let's get back to the show.
Oh my gosh, yes. I think stress is huge. I think hydration we can touch on very quickly, but we often don't touch on that one a lot, which is just like, if you're not drinking enough water, you're going to have more, a higher glucose because your blood is more concentrated, right? Like you have, you're not going to be, your CGM is testing interstitial fluid. So it's not actually testing your blood sugar. It's testing the fluid around your blood cells, right? So it's testing how the sugar is moving in and out of your blood cells. And it's sort of like, almost like a 5 minute or so lag behind your actual blood glucose level. And this is normal. This is great. This works well. It's very effective, right? All those kinds of things. But if you don't have any fluid in your interstitial fluid, like you're really dehydrated, you're going to show your blood sugar as being really high. So try to drink water, try to stay hydrated. That's going to help you get more accurate readings. So I think that's really important. But stress is also a huge one that I think a lot of people who are, you know, quote unquote healthier or trying to benchmark themselves on the metabolic health spectrum, they find out, wow, look at how my blood glucose is reacting when I am stressed, or how I feel when my blood glucose is high. It's exacerbating symptoms of stress, all of those kinds of things. I think it's a really important relationship. And those hormones that are stress hormones, and also the hormones like insulin that control your glucose levels, are all very enmeshed. So you're totally right that that's an important aspect of things.
Yeah. What about any advice? Go ahead, Renee.
No, go ahead.
Just any advice in those situations. I find sometimes it's maybe it won't behoove someone to eat when they're in that stressed out state, right? We're not in rest and digest. So why would you force nutrients in? Any best practices around that, like slowing down, breathing, perhaps putting off a meal, or maybe changing the composition of your meal?
Yeah. I think you hit it, which is that when you are stressed and when you are in an acute stress situation, so there's like acute and chronic stress, and chronic stress is probably, as we know, the stress that over a longer period of time is going to contribute to negative health outcomes, right? Like chronic stress is the stuff that can affect like blood pressure, cholesterol, all these markers of metabolic health, and lead to chronic conditions down the road. So acute stress is, like to your point of earlier, what we got from our ancestors, right? It's that fight or flight mechanism that was like, back in the day when you're encountering a predator, you have this rush of glucose into your system, and basically everything else slows down when you are in an acutely stressful situation. So your body, your brain is triggering your nervous system and releasing cortisol and adrenaline. And when that happens in these acute stressful situations, your liver is releasing glucose to give you the energy to either run or fight. And so that's going to actually increase your blood sugar. Your heart rate increases, the airways of your lungs widen so you can get more oxygen to your body. And basically anything that's not contributing to like this very moment, how am I going to keep myself alive, slows down. So again, digestion, and your body does, again, make you more insulin resistant in those moments so that you have your system is replete with blood glucose that you can put to use if you need to run very quickly or you need to fight. Now, today, most of us not fighting bears, right? So this acute stress feeling that we're
been
getting.
Been a while, no.
Yeah, right. Some of us more than others, I guess. Most of us, that acute stress feeling is when, you know, your boss says, come into my office to speak to me, or your kid starts crying, or whatever the case may be. And it's still your body trying to take care of you. It's still your body trying to keep you alive in the moment. It's not the end of the world, but it's that repeated stressor over time that can start to break down these regulation systems, right? The way that insulin carries the glucose to the cell. So it's not the fact that we all get stressed. That's normal. But when you have that chronic stress and this acute stress sort of becomes this constantly, your brain is telling your body that you're in a high stress situation, that's when we see it start to develop into insulin resistance and problems like that. So to your point, deep breathing, there's tons of research to show that breath work and the slow inhale through your nose, you know, 4 seconds, exhale through your mouth, 4 seconds, is really helpful. If you are going to eat, I would say hydration, really important there. I would say trying to breathe to calm down before you eat. There's actually research to show that, you know, when you are in those situations, it can trigger the overeating of processed sugar, high fat foods. And that can actually, again, like we've talked about these cycles that sort of come into play, your body can trigger you to want to do that, right? Stress eating. And then also that can dysregulate your cortisol response, right? So that's all in mesh. So if you can avoid those kinds of, I'm stressed, I'm going to go eat a candy bar or something like that, that's going to be best case scenario for your metabolic health in that moment. You know, trying to, hey, I'm going to go outside and just sit in my backyard and meditate, or I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to take the stairs for a few minutes. It'll help regulate your breathing, all of those kinds of things, much better than grabbing the snack, which feels good in the moment, but it's actually not only harming your glucose in the moment, but can lead to that cycle of increased cortisol, you know, increased sugar drive further down the line.
So you're saying don't grab a Snickers bar like the commercial says.
I don't know if I can say, you know, on record, can I say that? But, you know, yeah.
I hate that commercial. Stressed? Grab a Snickers bar.
Well, Well, we know that a Snickers is doing nothing for our hunger. Let's be honest, right? You know,
yeah.
If you're hungry, grab a Snickers. It's like, no, get some protein, you know?
Yeah. So that's, I think, the stress a lot of people are aware of, right? The boss calling you, the kid yelling at you. But what about physiological stress? Do you see, like, when someone is fighting even something acute, like a cold or flu or COVID, do you see anything change in glucose when someone is sick?
Yeah, so that's a big one. And people get nervous about that. And this is, like, again, something that you can, with a CGM, like, your body is probably going to be more insulin resistant when you have a cold or when you are sick, or what if you have an infection, any of those kinds of things, right? Even in women, before our periods happen, usually right beforehand, you're going to become a little bit more insulin resistant. Now, again, taking stock in how you feel, taking stock in what you're eating during those times is great. But what I tend to say, again, because of these things, like you said, mentioned earlier, it can get very like, well, I want the flat line, or I don't want this to happen. It's like, this is a cycle and a phase of your life. And especially if you're sick, it's like, by doing the things that you need to do when you're sick, like resting, like not, you know, physically pushing your body and working out when you just need to, getting a lot of fluids, those are all things that are going to help. And that period of insulin resistance, when you have a true illness, is, again, your body trying to work to get you back to a healthy state. So don't fight that. Don't diet when you're sick, you know, all those kinds of things. You know, before your period, it's like trying to eat healthfully, trying to be knowledgeable about what you need during your cycle, trying to get low intensity exercise, trying to eat a lot of protein and fiber, you know, that's going to be the thing that's best for you. But again, by trying to do something extreme or cut back, you can actually trigger more cortisol. You can actually trigger more of your system kind of getting out of whack. So understanding that your body wants you to live. Your body wants you to live the right way. Most of the time it knows what it's doing. And the reason that we've gotten out of touch with it is because of just all the stuff out there telling us we should be another way. So trying to use the CGM to tap back into what your body needs, and understanding how you can support your body's own needs and what it's asking for, I think in cases of sickness, you know, menstrual cycle, all of those kinds of things is super important.
Mm. Yeah.
Great advice. You just reminded me of my third favorite reason for wearing a CGM. And this one's specific to women in our cycle, when we are a little more insulin resistant and we should be feeding our progesterone. That's not a time to restrict just because we see our glucose a little higher. It's normal. Like, let's give permission to the women.
Yes.
Okay. Keep feeding.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Exactly. Right. Yeah.
So actually, I would love to do like a breakdown of the female cycle for women listening. So going through the phases, do you have a recommendation of the carbs week by week?
That's a great question. I don't have one week by week, but I would say that definitely before yours. And so the thing is, this is we're playing the hits here, but the CGM before your period or during, mostly before your period is when sort of all your hormones are at a peak before you enter the actual cycle or your actual menstruation. And so that's when a lot of people can see that insulin resistance and can be like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm getting sick, I'm whatever, but really it's just right before your period. But some people see it more during. So again, it's like, this is a time when you can kind of look at those phases and go, okay, here's the standard sort of operating procedures here, as far as like, I can expect to be a little more insulin resistant here. I can expect, you know, to feel a little more energetic here, all of those kinds of things. But I think a fascinating thing to do is to look at those kind of standard and then track your own cycle through that and see where you are feeling it the most, because you might notice, hey, it's actually not right before my period that I'm feeling the most insulin resistance. It's almost like right in the middle of it for whatever reason. You know, I've heard that anecdotally from a lot of people, like I don't follow that. My body doesn't seem to follow that exact track, you know? And since this is something that most of us experience every month, you can try something different, right? You can do that little experiment of like, hey, I'm going to, you know, try and reduce my exercise. Or maybe I do feel great when I'm doing heavy lifting during that time. Or maybe I do want to reduce carbs a little bit before and that makes me feel my best. So I think the CGM can help you get through that. It can help you understand a little bit how your body operates best and figure out when the peaks and falls of your own hormonal cycle is happening and how you can support that with exercise, sleep, stress, and food best.
Yeah. The ultimate That's experiment. Great. Yeah. And is there somewhere in the very app that women should be like putting notes like that so that they can start to do that?
So there is a little notes section. You can definitely add some notes in there. And we typically recommend that people do that if they want to say like start of cycle, end of cycle, things like that. We used to have a little event marker in that. I haven't checked in a while. We might still have it, which is the when you can log an event. You know, you can log, hey,
I here's see that my... in there.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Okay, great. Yeah. So that's a way to do it where it's not going to like, that's a great way to, you can add the event and be like start of your cycle, end of your cycle, right? So you know that within that window you had, you know, those 4 days or whatever it may be for maybe things were a little wonky and you can look at those 4 days. So typically I say, mark the beginning and the end. And you can see then, okay, within that window, I know that was when I saw these crazy blood sugars or actually it was really great. And the week before was kind of crazy. So that can be really helpful for looking at a specific window.
Cool. Yeah. I hadn't explored that tab. So I'm in the app now. This is not something I've seen in other CGM apps. This is really cool. Adding an event and it all comes with a little emoji next to it.
Yeah. And so there's
energize, travel, caffeine, alcohol.
Yeah. Cause those are the things that like, you know, it's a little less specific, but I know that, you know, my team is so, you know, like traveling is one that, especially if you're going across time zones, circadian rhythm, all of that stuff. Right. So it's helpful to at least know. And cause I mean, we're all so busy, right? You look back at the app and you go like, they got my glucose is crazy. What was going on? And then you realize like, oh, I was traveling those 3 days or, oh, I was, you know, giving a presentation at work the next day. And I was so like those things that happen in our lives can be very informative. And so if you're tracking it all in one place, very helpful.
Very helpful. I mean, just logging in general, because we all forget what we did and thought and saw yesterday. So in terms of the Very app, what else can you share about the uniqueness of the app and what you guys are doing at Very?
Yeah, absolutely. So our major thing that we have just come out with is the Very program, which is our proprietary program that is going to walk you through working towards better metabolic health. And, you know, this was created by our health team in coordination with our advisors from Stanford, Duke, Harvard. And it's sort of our latest program is divided into 4 stages. And this is the first stage is finding your baseline, where you're really going to benchmark several metrics of your glucose and your health to see where you fall on the spectrum that we talked about of metabolic health. So you sort of have the starting point anchored to where you can improve on. The next stage is going to be finding the right foods for you. So you're going to learn more about what you're eating, what the quality of the food is, how it is affecting your blood glucose, and starting to build a list of your best foods that work best for you and your body, right? So, hey, if you're going grocery shopping, if you're trying to be like, what are the recipes that best support me? You've built this list of them in your Very app. By stage 3, you're going to be building a meal plan. So putting the diet pieces all together, creating a sustainable, balanced diet. And again, building that sort of like, here's the foods, here's the recipes, here's the meal composition that was working best for you to support metabolic health. And then in our final stage, we're looking at more of the lifestyle things that we mentioned before, which are heavy on exercise and getting into some sleep and stress stuff as well, so that you can balance all of these sort of evidence-based actions and habits for better insulin sensitivity, better glucose balance, and sort of extending your health span. So it's really great. There's in-app content. There are in-app goals to hit. We're working towards more app personalization so that, you know, you might do the program once, hit certain benchmarks. You could do it again with your benchmarks increased, right? To try to sort of improve your health throughout the program, things like that. But really Vary is sort of this one-stop shop. The app specifically, you can use it with a CGM. You can use it for meal logging and food quality without a CGM if you wanted to. But you can also track everything in there, right? You can track your sleep. We have integrations with Oura, you know, Apple, Google Fit, all those kinds of things. You can track stress. You can track your exercise. That will import from your, you know, your Apple Watch, your Fitbit, all of those kinds of things. So having everything in one place, again, the focus on food, exercise, sleep, and stress is so huge, and starting to improve in those areas and knowing where you need to improve in those areas. So all of that is tracked in the Vary app, and the program is really going to walk you through it. And like we said earlier, sort of help you build those habits one on top of the other so that you are building lasting habits, right? It's a lifestyle. It's not a quick fix is what we always like to say. And we're trying to really move away from that sort of like what a lot of other programs are doing out there, which is that quick fix type of thing.
And yeah, how many weeks would that take? Like all the steps that you just said, do you have a recommendation for that?
Yeah. So if you did it, so the program is meant to be done in 4 sensors. So every sensor is about 14 days, right? So that's 8 weeks. But what a lot of people do on our plan is they will do 2 weeks, right? You get a sensor a month. You're going to do 2 weeks, and then you're going to kind of practice those habits further, right? So say I learned a lot about the foods that work best for me, and you know, I'm getting support from our in-app content about habit building and grocery shopping and how to put this knowledge to use, right? You got like a little mini course each day that's building you towards supporting that habit. And so I'm going to go, great, I'm going to keep doing this for the next couple of weeks. I still can use my Vary app without a sensor. I can go back to my foods. I can log my meals. I can do all that kind of stuff. And then when I get to the next sensor, you know, the goal is to put it on and see that those metrics are starting to improve, right? And then you've solidified that habit. And now we're on to the next one. So you can do it all told in 8 weeks of continuous wear. But, you know, if stuff in between, a couple of days in between sensors, it's sort of like a 4-month program.
Great. Yeah, I kind of like the downtime in between. I think we should be practicing.
Totally.
Training wheels off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And just the other comment I was going to make, this is the only app I've seen that does the Oura integration. So you can see the overlay of the glucose with the sleep, which I just started playing with that on the app. I'm kind of interested to see what it shows me. If I do have a large deviation in the middle of the night, did it wake me up? Was I already awake?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we have people have questions all the time about the nighttime, and, you know, I went low, I did this, I did that, you know, and it's like, okay. So then you start to ask questions about the middle of the night and like, well, did it wake you up? How did you feel? Da-da-da. And people are sort of like, I don't really like, you know, it's the middle of the night. It's like trying to remember your dreams. You're like, oh, it was very vivid, but I can't remember any of it. Right. So it's that kind of thing. And so I think this integration is really great for that, because it's really telling you like, look, you were in really deep sleep and your glucose was great, or, you know, you were awake and, or rolling around and your glucose was low. And that's probably something we should look at. Right. So can be super helpful. Kind of like you said, overlaying those things.
Yeah. How low is too low when you're sleeping? Is there a number we should stay away from?
So again, like 70 is usually is like the bottom of our range in the app. The challenge that we get sometimes is that people see their blood sugar go low at night. Some people, as mentioned, some people run a little lower at night. I would say 60 to 70 is not crazy, especially with interstitial fluid and your bodily processes slowing down. There is also a thing with the sensor called a compression hypoglycemia. So if you have it on your arm and that's the side you sleep on, I always say try to avoid that side, because if you sleep on that side, you can, by pressing the sensor really hard into your arm, you can get an erroneous low reading. So sometimes we have that with people going like, I was really low. And you're like, did you sleep on your left side? And they're like, yes. And you're like, you probably weren't. So most of the time, if you're going low at night, my main concern is, does it accompany symptoms? Are you waking up sweating, shaky? You know, and when I say sweaty, I mean like really sweaty, right? Like we're having night sweats kind of thing. Sweating, shaky, dizzy. If you're waking up with that, that may be a true concerning low blood sugar. But nocturnal hypoglycemia while it is a thing, it is less common than I think most people think it is. So understanding that nocturnal compression hypoglycemia, if you think you're having symptoms overnight with low blood sugars, definitely talk to your provider. You can bring them this data. I would say that, 65 to 70 is pretty normal around there. And if you're feeling fine, you're sleeping well, you're probably okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I agree. Awesome. Anything else you want to share about Veri, the app, about getting started, about how people can find you and Veri?
Yeah. So we are Veri on Instagram. Veri.co is our website. We have a blog there, which has new blogs, about 6 new blogs every month where you can dive deeper into stuff. We also have, if you join Veri, we have a really great private online community that you can join as a Veri user. We have awesome people there, different groups, right, of menopause or biohacking or, athletes, whatever it may be, people asking questions, sharing recipes, all of those kinds of things. You can kind of join in if you want to do something like that. But our new program is super exciting. People are loving it so far. And so, I think getting started by going to our website there is where you can learn more about that. And
perfect. Thank you.
We will link to all of that in the show notes too for everyone.
Yeah, so thank
it's
you
easy
guys.
To find. Amazing.
Awesome.
Well, Emily, one final question for you. Can you leave our audience with one piece of advice, something they should start doing today to optimize their health? What would that be?
Today. I would say today, especially since we're talking about glucose, I would say if you haven't done it recently, you should schedule a physical because that's your first step towards getting your blood biomarkers, understanding a little bit of the benchmark. I would say thinking about what you are eating, getting more fiber, getting more protein. A lot of people in America are not hitting those. Actually, the majority of people in America are not hitting those recommendations daily. And if you are interested, take a look into CGMs because that could be a step towards better health for you and uncovering better glucose for yourself. So schedule that physical. So schedule your physical, eat some more fiber and protein. That's always going to benefit you and your glucose, and read a little more on CGMs.
Great. Love
Thanks, right. Emily.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, it was the best. So fun talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
Yes, we loved it. And thanks to everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional.